The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Wrestling to the Max, Monday Night Raw, review.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling of the Max's Raw Review for September 4th, 2017. And of course, we are brought to you by W2Mnet.com. That's right, the place where we go to find all your great wrestling content, plus a lot more. Hey, I also want to give a shout out to 411mania.com, as well as lastwordonprowrestling.com. Go check out both them. They all support us, and we appreciate everything they do for us. Hey, and if you want to go find us on, you know, maybe Apple Podcast or over there on Podcast Addict, maybe even YouTube, search out Wrestling to the Max. Subscribe, rate, and review today to get all our great reviews and, of course, all the episodes of Wrestling to the Max that you can handle, guys. Just a little tidbit there for you. Also, just once again, want to let you guys know, I am, of course, Gary Vaughn, and he is our host tonight, not Paul Leaser, Sean Garmer tonight for you for all.
What's up, everybody?
Hey, Sean. It's kind of cool and different, you know, back me and you instead of doing SmackDown on 205, you know, sometimes when I fill in. Now it's me and you on Raw. This is going to be fun to see your take on Raw this week.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a bad Raw to come back to and watch, and surprisingly, it was not. It was an interesting Raw, especially that main event that we'll get into that was better than I think it had any right to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paul's going to fill in for me on. I'm sure we said this a bunch of times last week, but Paul's going to fill in for me with Harry to do SmackDown while Gary and I do our NFL season preview on the football show. So you'll get to hear Paul tomorrow doing SmackDown on 205. So, well, here we go with Raw on this show. We start off with a match. Oh my God. Can you believe it, Gary? We're starting off with a Matt Classic happening instead of somebody talking, and they are sort of playing off of Kurt Angle giving John Cena his debut back in 2002, and now it's John Cena doing that for Kurt Angle's son, Jason Jordan. You have Jason Jordan doing some amateur stuff, and they play on that several times, mentioning Jordan's amateur background. He does a belly-to-belly. You have Cena trying to get that AA. He does his thing. Finally, after taking about 20 minutes, it goes through a commercial. It didn't take 20 minutes. It took about 12, maybe 15 with the commercial. But he hits that AA, and Jason Jordan goes down. It got really good in the second half. And, hey, yeah, you know, a good match. Then Roman comes out because, hey, the storyline's going on. He tells Cena that you're a 16-time champ, but it took you 20 minutes. It didn't take him 20 minutes to beat a rookie. Did you drag it on purpose? Are you losing a step? And then he just calls him a fake-ass bitch for lying. And Cena, you know, it kind of does his jokes and everything. They make jokes about each other's balls. Then he's going to show him everything he's about at No Mercy. Roman Reigns has no respect. Roman Reigns doesn't respect Cena. And, yeah, pretty much.
I like that finale that you just put on that, pretty much. No, it's true, though. That's basically a repeat of what we got last week. This is nothing super special, nothing overly new, just a different sort of...
Well, I mean, they dropped the bombs last week, so like it was going to be really hard to have it compared to...
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. I mean, it is a little hard to compare, but still they're kind of feeding off that and it's still kind of progressing, which I don't think this is bad. I think everything that John Cena said to Roman Reigns once again almost kind of feels a little bit more impactful. I think Roman's doing his best, and I think he has some good zingers. I don't know that yet I'm still buying into Roman's stuff compared to John Cena's, and that may be, you know, on purpose. Let's be honest. I mean, I think, you know, Vince is probably sitting back there saying, okay, I love John Cena as the babyface, but hey, they want Roman to be heel or they want John to be heel. I'd rather give Roman that little shade of darkness compared to John Cena. So let's let him do it. Let's let him go out there and kind of play that part. And that's the way I feel this is going completely every time I hear these two guys go back and forth. But I honestly, Sean, I'm entertained. I think that they give us something that we kind of want to see, especially, you know, some of the smart mark things that John Cena and Roman throw at us, you know, kind of making those, you know, things that we read on the internet coming true, even though, right, you know, this is all entertainment. So I'm not against it.
And a lot of times I think people, they think that a lot of that stuff is not scripted, and a lot of that stuff's more scripted than you think. Mm-hmm. You know, you think that a lot of that's ad-lib, and, you know, I think except for a few of those things that Cena said last week, a lot of that was already in there, and they just kind of make it seem like it's ad-lib, and it's not. So, interesting. Mm-hmm. Just the way people were taking this after what happened with the big old, oh my god, they were shooting on each other and everything. Basically, it just felt like WrestleMania 28 all over again, except for Roman Reigns sucks on the microphone compared to John Cena and The Rock, so...
Yeah.
You know.
That's a great comparison. I didn't think about that. But you're completely right on that. I'm excited about seeing what they do to an extent, because this is just something that I think a lot of people have been talking about, like, you know, who's number one in this company? We're seeing the future, and we're seeing kind of the past in John Cena. And so I think it brings a little bit of intrigue to me. I'm okay with it. I know a lot of people will probably hear me say this, and good God, you're interested in Roman Reigns and John Cena, really? I think it's actually something that you can kind of hang your hat on and kind of feel like it's at least a decent storyline compared to maybe some of the other things we see on Raw. And maybe that's a sad thing. I don't know. But I'm okay with this. I have no problems with it. I'm actually kind of looking forward to No Mercy to see what they do. But, you know, to kind of talk about the match itself and what they were showing you before the match, did it make you feel old, Sean, to think 15 years ago that happened between Kurt Angle and John Cena? It made me feel really old, because I remember watching that.
Yes, it definitely made me feel really old. I felt more old by the Jeff Hardy talking about his daughter can now watch him wrestle, actually, than the Kurt Angle thing, because they've shown that Kurt Angle and John Cena thing a lot recently. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really think about it. But yeah, when Jeff Hardy goes, yeah, my daughter can now be watching me wrestle, I'm just like, oh God, it's been that long. Jeez. I feel old now.
Yeah, no. Good Lord. It's ridiculous. But, you know, I did want to say that, you know, they did a good job of making Jason Jordan look like he is a contender, like he is someone who belongs in the ring with a lot of these guys. And they've done it for a while now, ever since he's kind of stepped up to this role. Am I happy with it? Am I okay with it? Sure. I just hope they don't get a little over too far-fetched, because I'm sorry, you can have Jason Jordan face the biggest and the baddest in the company. I don't buy this guy as a top star just because he came to Raw, just because he's Kurt Angle's son. I hope that's not what they're trying to prove a point and do. I think what they're leaning more towards is, you know, this is Jason Jordan. He can go in here and do this and that, but hey, we're going to do something special with him. That's why we're having him face guys like John Cena, while we're having him face mid-carders and not just jobbing people out against him. So I think they're doing a good job with his image, but I'm not sold on Jason Jordan just yet, because he's not well-rounded. He's not a microphone kind of guy. He's not going to be that type of person. So until they get him that at that point, Sean, I don't know really how to think about this Jason Jordan thing.
Yeah, that's the thing that he lacks, and I think we've said that on all the various shows. I'm sure you guys have talked about it every week. I apologize, I don't always have time to listen to every time y'all do Raw, but just, you know, it's Jason Jordan needs to talk, or he is going to flounder, and he's already floundering. This thing is already almost dead in the water, as it is. And they're not helping him at all by just having him never say anything and go out there and wrestle, and that's it. Like, look, we all know that he's a good wrestler. Like, that's not the problem here. I think we got that with American Alpha. We got that with everything else. Like, we don't. You need character from these guys. In fact, you need character from everyone on the roster, but, you know, this is how this company works. They're so weird about the people that should be talking don't talk enough, and the ones that shouldn't be talking talk too much. So, you know, let's do everything backwards, WWE.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, I think that they put him in a position to, you know, once again, be a contender. That way, when they have a future feud, it's very believable. We're not believing this rookie is coming in and you know, all of a sudden beating a major guy. But, you know, I still have a little bit of fear and a little bit of worry that they're putting this thing together way too fast, especially if we don't have a clear direction. And they have not shown us a clear direction. They don't even show us even a slight heel turn just yet. So in my opinion, and me and Paul, yes, we have talked about this quite a few times, but, you know, that's our thought process on the fact that it is a good idea to go heel with him and do things with Kurt Angle that way. It seems the most logical. But, you know, any other way, you're right, Sean. He's floundering. He's not doing anything impactful.
I would imagine that would be a WrestleMania storyline. If they wanted to go that far, if they really want to have faith in it. So I feel like you can't do that right now because you're going to run out of ideas really fast if you do. So they're going to have to wait until, let's say, I don't know. You know, I really think that Kurt Angle is going to wrestle here at some point, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the perfect way to have that happen is have Kurt Angle be on a team with Jason Jordan. And you can protect Kurt Angle. You can, Survivor Series would be great for him to come back in. I don't know if you'd do something involving like Stephanie and Triple H come back or whatever. I don't know how you would get to that point, but maybe you have Jason Jordan turn on him there and you start building to it, and maybe you tease something with the Royal Rumble and it leads up to WrestleMania. I don't know, but if you do it here in September, WWE, knowing how that company works, it's going to be dead by the time you get to the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I can see that. So we'll have to wait and see. I'm really curious on what they're going to do with Jason Jordan. I just hope it is something that's important because they're giving us a lot of TV time with Jason Jordan.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I mean, they have to, right? I mean, to justify the investment that was put into the storyline and everything else, they kind of got to give him TV time. And I guess it's better than him just, that's Kurt Angle's son. He's never on. So,
yeah,
I did mention the Jeff Hardy moment earlier. He cuts a promo talking about, of course, that his daughter gets to watch him wrestle sort of the last line. But he talks about, you know, he wants to win the IC title. He's taking this chance after winning the Battle Royal to live for the moment, as they do, bringing old Hardy catchphrases, and every match he wrestles as if it's his last. The way he did this, I thought the promo was actually pretty good there. And you knew that this was not going to be something that was just going to happen with no interference, considering that the Miztourage is around, and that was kind of the story of this one, is that, you know, Miz gets pulled away by Axel and Bo Dallas several times. When Jeff starts getting control, Jeff still kind of dominates. Finally, Matt shows up to take care of the Mr. Oz. The ref throws all three of them out. You have a pretty good closing stretch. And right when you think Jeff Hardy's going to sew everything up, Miz counters into the skull-crushing finale, thanks to some help from his wife, who still remained out there, even though if Matt's getting tossed, why don't you just toss Maryse too? But Miz wins and beats Jeff Hardy.
I can't really say it's a big surprise. I didn't really believe that Miz was going to lose the IC title this quick or on this show or anything like that. Although it was kind of fun to see Jeff Hardy in this matchup and to see the possibilities and the fact that, you know, anything can really honestly happen. We just didn't know. But it makes sense for the Miz because, you know, you have the Miz Taraj and everybody out there to kind of help him along. And I thought the match itself, you know, worked pretty well, even up to the point to where, you know, all the outside interference was kind of pushed away when you got three guys ejected. It also makes sense for Maryse to still be there. I think for the fact that she kind of hides out in her own corner, right? She's never really around Bo Dallas right. And, you know, Curtis Axel. So it seems like their game plan worked just perfect. I think it actually kind of, you know, made this well-rounded because you have, you know, a decent beginning with interference. You don't have the interference. You have a pretty okay, you know, great stretch at the end there to entertain the fans. And then, of course, once again, the Miz finds a way to sneak a win because of somebody else helping him out. So good story, a good match. I like it. I would be curious to see if they, you know, maybe get Jeff Hardy in the hunt back and try to get another shot at the IC title because of the interference, or if that's a one-off kind of thing. I really do want to know that because I would love to see Jeff Hardy as your Intercontinental Champion if it's not The Miz. I think that'd be a good thing for WWE overall. The fans still love Jeff Hardy. They're still behind him, and I think it'd be good. But, hey, you know, The Miz is doing his thing. I think, you know, even John Cena gave him some props, so I love The Miz. I love everything that they're about. I think this is a pretty decent match and all.
I wonder how Matt feels in all this, too, because, you know, he went through this before where Jeff started getting the limelight and Jeff started getting titles, and then Matt kind of gets left behind. You know, I wonder if this is just a one-off or they're going to try to keep this going because of the interference. They protected Jeff there. But, man, if I'm Matt, those old thoughts start creeping in that here I am. They brought us back to the tag team, and I'm already starting to lag behind. And I was the one that was bringing in this broken Hardys and all that stuff. And I was going to bring something to the table that they didn't have before. And, yeah,
Yeah.
Do you think it's a problem?
I don't know if it's per se a problem. I think, you know, let's just say we're going to take this by face value. I think Matt looks at this as, well, you know, my brother's doing his thing again. We're still a tag team. We're still working together. They didn't split us up. So I'm going to do what I can and hope that I can get some legs with this whole broken or awoken universe kind of stuff. And go in my own direction if they are going to keep Jeff in the limelight. See, it makes complete sense to me if in the future they do go with the Broken Hardy stuff for Matt to walk off away from the tag team and do that stuff and then maybe bring Jeff back in the fold later on. That's kind of the way they did it in the other promotion. I think that's the way they should do it in this promotion as well. I think, you know.
But Matt also got to bring in his other family, which I don't think he's going to be able to do.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. I mean, they may get Vanguard 1, but that's about it. I don't think you're going to see, you know, Rebby, the baby for sure, Maxwell, or even, you know, stepfather. So I think, you know, for the most part, yes, I think there is probably a little bit of concern for Matt, but I think when he gets his paycheck in the mail, I don't think he gets so concerned. I that's what we hear from a lot of these guys is, yeah, creative matters to us, but we're making good money for our family. They got me on TV. I'm doing something. let's just see what they got for me now. So I don't think this is the time to panic for Matt. I think we're still a little early. Now, if we get a year from now and this is still going on where Jeff's still doing more things than Matt, I think that's the problem.
Yeah, maybe. I just don't want to see that happen, you know, where there's Matt's already starts feeling that he's second fiddle here, and, you know, because you bring them both in. Obviously, Jeff is more talented. Obviously, Jeff has the, without the broken gimmick, Jeff has the bigger fan base. You still got a lot of the, you know, considering where they were in frickin' Omaha, they were getting, you know, I feel like I should have Peyton Manning drop right now, but, you know, just, they were getting some big delete chance, and I mean, that's not an area where, you know, TNA just goes around. So that you're in Omaha, Nebraska, and getting delete chance pretty loud when Matt shows up, and you can see he kind of didn't know whether to do the finger thing or not. I wonder if they've told them to kind of put the kibosh on that until something gets figured out, because they might have gotten some cease and desist or whatever that nobody's talked about. I don't know. Or they've just kind of told them that, look, until you have it with you, please don't do anything that involves the gimmick, because you're teasing them and they may never get to see it. But we'll see. I just really feel like that stuff's kind of died down now. It's weird. You don't hear too much about it anymore.
Yeah, I think that's the way they want it until they get it figured out. I don't know if they want to keep continuing on and allowing this whole thing to be in the limelight. I think the quieter this gets, I think the easier it is for the WWE lawyers to work in the system and try to get things to work out their way. I don't know for a fact, but, you know, also the quieter they get with it, I think TNA looks at this as not as valuable as it once was. As long as it's big in the news, hey, they get to stay in the news, right? So.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. Just, I think we got to be, I don't know, I'd hate to see it just never happen. All of a sudden they killed it because of this, and then, you know.
I will say this, I know we're trying to go along with the show, but if the Broken Hardy stuff never happens, we may see a shorter time span with the Hardys in WWE. I think you're right. I think Matt will get frustrated, and I think he will try to go and get back on the indie circuit.
But the thing is, too, like, is Impact going to come in and go, you can't use it on the indies either, because they don't own it, right? So he would then have to pay some kind of royalty or something to be able to use that.
I think what we saw, though, if you remember, I mean, after they left, they went to Ring of Honor, did all that stuff.
Yeah, but that was, they were still, that was with GFW's blessing, I think. Remember, because they had to work out with GFW to be able to have that video show up on the pay-per-view and everything else. So, I don't know. I feel like It's like that, you know, the Paul McCartney thing. Until Michael Jackson gave him back the rights, he had to pay. Doesn't matter where he performed Hey Jude or any other Beatles song that Michael Jackson owned, he had to pay for it. So,
yeah, see, Sean, this is where I wish I would have went to law school so I could give people information that I don't have in front of me now. So,
but all right, let's move on from this. We did have a lot of tag team involvement on this show. We had the Cesaro and Sheamus taking on Rhino and Heath Slater for a very quick win to make them look strong against their opponents. As Ambrose and Rollins were on commentary here, I thought they were kind of fun on commentary. And then you later get the champions having their moment as they wrestle Gallus and Anderson. And in this one, Rollins and Ambrose win because of an interference by Cesaro and Sheamus. I'm very glad that Anderson and Gallus got to have a full, like, 10, 12 minutes. This wasn't them just getting squashed. They don't deserve that. But still, you know, lots of tag team stuff, lots of fun things from Ambrose and Rollins. And you got more stuff on Cesaro and Sheamus, along with a brawl happening with Sheamus and Cesaro and the Gallus and Anderson. So, heels going at it, baby.
Yeah. You know, to sum all this up, I think this stuff is okay. And what I mean by okay is average. I'm not really feeling this tag team division right now, Sean. I mean, I don't know what it is. It just doesn't have that luster. Right now, Gallows and Anderson, they're almost a joke at points. And I don't really have a lot of care. I think it was really sweet of the crowd to do the whole too sweet stuff with them. That was really nice of them to remember that those guys actually used to be relevant. But now here they are, and they're almost a step away from being, you know, guess what? Slater and Rhino, who are right now basically jobbing, doing jokes because, you know, they're nothing. It bothers me a little bit.
But that's going to happen with you're going to have jobber teams.
Oh, yeah. I know. But, you know, they at points, they're very up and down with Gallows and Anderson. Oh, no, we're going to make these guys contenders for the titles. And then, oh no, hold on, let's not, let's drop them all the way to the bottom. No, let's bring them back up. They kind of do that a little bit too often, if you ask me. Slater and Rhino, I get that's a given, and that's fine. Just kind of like you had Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, that's a, kind of a given. But I kind of feel like they are playing this weird roller coaster game with Gallows and Anderson. I just am not a fan of. You know, and then, of course, you have the guys that really want to focus on, which is Sheamus and Cesaro, which, you know, they're decent, fine tag team. I've enjoyed their work. And you got Seth Rollins and Ambrose, who, of course, you know, those guys have both won world titles and have been a tag team in the past. So all these guys, these four at least, have some credibility behind them, which is great. I just don't know that I'm super invested, and I don't know if they've done anything to really make me want to be invested.
Yeah, Gallus and Anderson. I kind of like the Cesaro and Sheamus and the Ambrose and Rollins storyline. That one's been good. Everything else involving the tag teams has kind of been just eh, you know. And that's the thing, though. They only can really have whatever the tag title feud is usually the one you're sort of paying attention to more than the others. And then other than that, just kind of, it is whatever it is, as you know. So
yeah, it's weird, and maybe it's my. I'm a little annoyed, I guess I should say. I'm not a big fan of this Rollins Ambrose matchup for some reason. I'm annoyed because they seem like they're supposed to be cool, but I just don't find them cool. You know, so it's just a personal taste thing, I think, for me. I don't know.
I can understand that. I'm kind of happy to see them, you know, back together again. I feel like they explain themselves well enough in the commentary that, hey, we've been through these wars, we've been through everything. You know, it's one of those, just you're saying, oh, hey, we've been through all this, we want to be tag teams again, because we're kind of tired of fighting each other and everything. We've had our moments, but deep down we're friends. And, you know, hey, as a tag team, they're fun. I enjoy their matches. So the more they can do this and be entertaining and not have to find spots for them in singles competition, I think this is kind of smart by WWE to kind of give them a break. Because they really have sort of been up there and sort of kind of been doing nothing.
That's probably part of the reason, honestly. It's probably just this bad taste in my mouth about both guys because they have done nothing. And as a tag team, they're fine. I don't hate them. I don't know that I'm overly entertained still by what they're doing. I want to see more. I want to see them be a tougher team. You know, they are the tag champs. That's great. But I want to see them do more exciting stuff.
Fair enough. I am, but You know, that's the kind of thing, unless they do some kind of bring in another tag team up or something, this is kind of what we're going to get.
Yeah.
So, moving on from the tag teams, we did have the cruiserweights as well on here. You had a, feels like it's just a rematch from 205 with another six-man tag. You have Enzo and Grand Metalik and Cedric Alexander taking on Drew Gulak, Tony Nese, and Noam Dar. And you have Enzo going really, really long with the introductions. The Grand Metalik one was kind of funny. It is what it is. It's Enzo's kind of just, I don't want to say that he brings the other guys down, but he kind of does. The fact that he has to go around cheating because he knows he's not as good as the other guys. But this match was just, it was whatever. It's probably the worst match on the show, actually.
Yeah, this was not the smoothest match or ride, and it was okay. Once again, this is a six-man tag. We've seen it before. It didn't feel like it was anything super spectacular. They had their moments here and there. But really, I think Enzo coming out and talking way too long really kind of made you start to lose interest before the match even started.
The crowd really
And
didn't care either.
Enzo is not. You know how they say the old Grey Mary ain't what he used to be? Well, Enzo ain't
Yeah.
either, you know?
It's like, unless he's doing the catchphrases that everybody knows, people just don't care after that. And then his rhymes are awful.
Yeah.
Like.
It's sad. It really is kind of a sad story because
Yeah.
this guy at one time, Sean, is a guy that we both endorsed, we really liked, you
We
know,
were
we
there when they showed up.
Yeah, you're right. We were there, and it was really exciting. And now this split with Kaz, and then of course now on 205 Live, it's just not what we were expecting from him. I said it, maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, not really a fan of his anymore. And this just continues on and on to make me not a fan of Enzo Amore. And it doesn't really help the rest of this 205 Live roster. I'm sorry. I know they think that it's bringing 205 some new energy. It's bringing someone that the crowd loves, but I'm sorry. There's just
They don't
nothing
really
there.
love them. I love him.
No, you're right. They didn't. You're right. Tonight they did not really get all that up and excited about what he had to say. And he talks way too long. They need to give him shorter time spans of, making the jokes, rhymes, whatever he wants to do. So there you go. You know what's kind of sad, Sean? This was a decent match. It was nothing great. The one thing I cared more about was the little segment they did later on in the show. I think that mattered way more with Neville than this whole thing at all.
Well, no, the thing with Neville is another thing that just continues to go on and on and on with the Cruiserweight division. Oh, here's another fatal five way to determine who's going to be the number one contender, because we can't, like, I know it's been a while. I know they've had stories for a little while, and I guess give them credit for that. They had the Austin Aries, they had the Tozawa. So you know who the opponent was going to be. It's kind of been a little while since they've had to do it, but it's just still, it's just, I'm kind of starting to loathe these things now when they say, oh, Fatal 5-Way, Elimination Match, whatever to determine who the number one contender is. It's like, oh, shoot me now. But I would think that Cedric Alexander winds up winning. He seems the most logical guy to kind of go next against Neville.
I would hope so. I think you're right. And Alexander, one of the guys in that 205 Live on that cruiserweight roster that has, somewhat charisma, lots of ability, someone that I think that they need to put a little bit more light on, which that would be the perfect opportunity right there. So it would be really cool to see. We'll find out tomorrow night if that takes place. But I think my argument for this being the best part of the Cruiserweights on this episode of Raw is just because I like Neville's attitude towards it. The way he kind of comes in there and controls the room, and you have these other guys, you know, buddy-buddy, and then all of a sudden now they're kind of put at odds again because Neville walks in the room and tears their world apart by saying, hey, you guys could, you know, possibly be in line to be getting my championship, but you have to face each other. So I appreciated that, and yes, it's done way too much, but kind of the story of 205 Live.
Exactly. The story of 205 Live forever and always.
Yeah.
The last sort of branching thing here to talk about is, of course, the women's division. You had earlier in the night, we find out that Nia's mad at Kurt Angle for why does Sasha Banks get a title shot? Kurt Angle's like, well, look, she has a contractual rematch. Emma shows up talking about, you know, that on Twitter nobody was talking about Nia at all. And that, hey, I'm the one that started the Women's Revolution. Nia actually threatens to kill her. So Kurt Angle says, how about this? We'll do Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks against Nia Jax and Emma. And if Nia Jax and Emma beat Sasha and Alexa Bliss, there's now a fatal four-way for the Women's Championship at No Mercy. Well, guess which way this was going to go down, Gary? I'm pretty sure we could all figure it out by the time that happened. Pretty much you had Nia doing her thing. She had a funny exchange with Alexa where she tries to slap her, and Nia kind of looks at her like, oh my god, you just did the wrong thing there. So it's just looking at her like she is going to die right this moment. She has her and Sasha have kind of miscommunications. And then Emma gets to steal the win. And Emma and Nia win, and of course you get the fatal four-way. Nia Jax just whoops Emma at the end because, you know, you're stealing my win here. And yeah, we get that match that we kind of knew was going to happen.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of spelled out. You're right. And I think even the winner of that match is going to be spelled out pretty quick.
we heard the rumor that Vince likes to be he likes the hot potato with the title.
So. We noticed. Yeah, I think, you know, we knew that at SummerSlam for sure when you saw, you know, guess who? Get the title back. That's right. He likes a Bliss. That was, to me, was definitely a big hot potato and a surprise. I kind of thought Sasha would hold on to it longer, but he's trying to be a little bit more sporadic and change things up. You know, the internet said it's going to happen that way. Ha ha, it's not. Even if it hurts our story. You know, I don't care if
it hurts
our
story. Yeah, because that's always just wonderful to do that to your people, not have anything planned for them at all.
Yeah, so I get the mind games, Vince, but, I mean, come on, let's be logical on some of this stuff.
I mean, what does that say to your people, to the people that work for you, that there's never really a plan?
Yeah. It's also, you know, an ego thing, I think, to an extent for Vince. You know, well, you guys don't know anything. And I think the other part of it also is it's not going to be entertaining for people if they can already guess who's going to win. So let's change things up a bit. Let's make them believe that anything can happen, which is fine.
But that's not true. That's how, they don't think about sports. But in sports, most of the time, we know who's going to win these games, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing that happens is when you go out there and that other team makes you feel that they have a shot at winning. Those are the best stories. And actually, that's what wrestling's really supposed to do. You see this happen in New Japan all the time. And you see this in WWE sometimes, depending on who it is. If you make us believe that that person has a chance, then it's going to be much more interesting, even if they lose. That's all you need to do is make us feel like that person has a chance, before they step in that ring, they will care. And if you go the logical way and the right person winds up winning, it's not going to bother us as much as if that person either gets squashed or you just make a title change for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not wrong. And I think that's what sometimes they do okay, but a lot of times not so okay at. In this situation we're looking at here, I mean, they wanted to make it out as, you know, well, Sasha's still a contender, but you don't forget Nia's still involved in all this, and we'll have her get close to winning, and then, you know, sometimes she'll lose, but in this case she's able to win, and they're trying to change things up a bit here. And I think that, you know, my personal opinion, Nia Jax is probably the next champion for that division. And I think that's okay. Not the best person if you want to talk about just pure wrestling, but I think when it comes to dominance, they want her to be the next Braun Strowman, but just for the women. And they're trying to make that point very relevant and, you know, make it something that matters. So they're doing these type of matches before we get to that point. All great. You know, poor Emma, she's just kind of thrown in there and, you know, she's not going to win. So you feel really bad for her. But, hey, at least she's in the picture. That's what's, I guess, important, too. So overall, I think at least all of this made sense. You know, even if we talk about some of the other theories and the things going on around it, I think the storyline makes sense. I think what they did here makes sense. So I'm okay, actually. This is something I walked away having a positive feeling about overall. And I have no problem with the four-way. So.
Yeah, I have a problem with it. I'm glad that Emma's involved. She's not winning, but at least she's there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good because they have somebody new, somebody fresh in there. Yeah, if Bailey didn't get hurt, probably would have been the same four that we've been seeing for a while. But, hey, that's what injuries are important for. It's just to create that space for someone else. I've been really just delaying having to talk about this because I don't care. I also missed this because I had to do other things. But Finn Balor talked again. And, yeah, he talks about winning championships, and he doesn't run from demons because sometimes he becomes one. Bray shows up, and he talks about hunting with his bare hands, that Balor didn't beat him at SummerSlam. The demon did, because the demon is actually Balor's like secret weapon. He wants him man to man. And yeah, so we're going to get Finn Balor the man against Bray Wyatt because Bray is a god.
Oh, you know, this is something that, you know, Paul and I dread, you know. So, Sean, no blame, no worries that you weren't paying attention to this. I'm glad you didn't. It didn't matter. And the problem is this should have been ended at SummerSlam. It should have been over. Extending it, who does it help? I don't think it helps either guy. You've got Finn Balor out here throwing out all these different things like, oh, I was a champion here, I should have been champion here, or this and that, you know, blah, blah, blah. Trying to make me feel good about him because he has a resume. Okay, whatever. And I love Finn Balor. I don't like what he's doing right now because it's something that's silly and they've already done it. And you got Bray Wyatt, who I used to love, and I still love him to an extent, but I just hate what they're doing with him. And he's spouting all this garbage out that just really is silly. Here's the way I feel about this match, Sean. Oh, hey, I want to fight you again. It's like a little kid, you know. Well, it was unfair because you had your shoes on when you ran down the street. I'm gonna race you again. Can you take your shoes off? You know, it's silly. It's like, I need another shot, but you had an unfair advantage. It's little kid stuff. It's stupid. I don't know why they're using it here. I don't know. I get that it could make sense, but to me, this is, we're adults. This is not something we need. I think it's dumb. This should have been over with. I don't care.
Fair enough. The last thing I think we have to talk about is obviously the main event here. I like that they had the promos to kind of build this up, that they had the video package of them breaking the ring the last time they fought. I thought Big Show was really impassioned with this promo. He looks awful with the shaved beard. He looks awful. If there is a man that does not need to be clean shaven, it is the Big Show. It makes him look older.
Oh.
He looks like a freaking grandpa with the no mustache or beard or something. You know, normally beards and everything else make you look older. With Big Show, it is somehow the exact opposite. And yeah, that was just so distracting. I could hardly pay attention to what he was saying. But yeah, it was still a good one. Braun just wants to send a message to everybody by beating Big Show again. And you know what? This match was way better than it had any right to be. You had Big Show going off the top for a big elbow drop. The crowd chanted, "This is awesome." When has the Big Show had a "This is awesome" chant in like forever?
Good God, yeah.
You know, like they were just going at it, whooping each other, hitting the big moves. I love this. You knew Braun was gonna win, but damn it, they freaking went out there and had a damn big man match, and this was just really freaking good. They just beat each other up for 16, 17 minutes, and Big Show did some crazy stuff for his age and his size, and, you know, Braun did his thing, and then he got to kill Big Show through the damn cage out to the outside. So, awesome stuff to end the show. But, man, I can't get enough. You know, I don't want to say that I want them to try it again, because trying to get them to do that twice is, that's crazy. But for the one time in a cage, this was some really fun stuff.
Yeah, you know, and here's the thing, you know, coming into this match, I had my fears. I really did. I thought, okay, Big Show again. Oh boy. So Braun Strowman's going to take about 6-7 minutes in the ring, and then he's going to walk out victorious. Whoop de doo. You know, that's just the way I felt about it. And then when they do this whole interview with the referee, which that pissed me off. And the reason it did is because, let's be honest, why are you having referees talk if they can't talk? That guy was obviously reading a teleprompter. Like, if he wasn't, he was going by memory, because he looked like he wasn't even looking at her when he was talking. It looked like he was kind of reading lines and then kind of looking away, then looking back and reading lines.
Well, remember, Braun is an actor.
No, I'm not talking about Braun. I'm talking about the referee.
Oh, the referees. Oh.
Just let it be natural. Just say, hey, but ref.
He's a referee, though. Like.
Yeah. I know, but that's my point. He should be more natural than even the wrestlers. I think, you know, he just should be an everyday guy. Like, look,
but I think
these two guys,
they're probably so scared that he just go, you know. Yeah.
I guess so. I just, if you're going to do that kind of stuff, I mean, just.
I did like that they interviewed him, though. Made it feel like a bigger deal.
It did. It was just annoying me. I'm sorry. I couldn't stand it. It was just, ugh. Anyway, so that was the worst part about it. I got scared about the match, but it ended up being, like you said, Sean, a lot better than I ever thought it would be. I really enjoyed it. I think that they gave us something to really, you know, hold on to here and feel like this main event was worthy of being called a main event. Both guys put a lot on the line. I think Big Show looked really good. He looked like a weirdo, but I mean, match-wise, he looked really good, you know. So, needless to say, I was entertained, and I think it makes sense. You have Braun Strowman go through a pretty close to 50-50 match with this guy, and at the end there, after he does his little spill, he throws Big Show through the cage, or the cell, whatever you want to call it. And I really like that visual. You really feel like, man, something special happened here on Raw at the end. So I think it was good stuff here in the main event. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, it was a fun way to end the show. Made Braun Strowman look really good. And I think it kind of rounded the show out in a great way as well. So for that, I give the show 6.5.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 6 myself. I think the show was as decent. I think the main event really helped it. I think if you would not have had a main event that was at that level, I think that you may even get closer to a 5 for me. I think some of this other parts of Raw were just okay because a lot of this was tag team. You had spent a lot of time with the cruiserweights. But, you know, it's almost like they decided to start the show pretty good, ho-hum in the middle, and at the end just give us something that's good, right? So I think the ho-hum part kind of took a little longer than I wanted it to. I think 6 is fair for me, so there you go. All right, guys. Well, that is, of course, our Monday Night Raw review. We really appreciate you all joining us tonight. It was a lot of fun. Man, Sean, this is something we don't get to do very often anymore, talk Raw together. So, that was a lot of fun. And we'll be doing it again, I'm sure, in the future. But, yeah, we are, of course, going to be doing some other great stuff coming up here. We'll be doing our Wrestling to the Max Part 1 later tonight. So be checking that out if you've already subscribed. Great. If you haven't, go do it now so you can get our Wrestling to the Max, basically our Wrestling Max show part one this week. And this show and a lot of other great shows we'll be doing this week, like, Sean already mentioned. Paul and Harry Broadhurst will be doing 205 Live, doing SmackDown Live tomorrow. And, of course, me and Paul will be doing NXT on Thursday. Also, want to make sure we give our love once again to Last Word on Pro Wrestling and, of course, 411media.com, as well as W2M.com, where you go find all your great wrestling needs, plus a lot more in the world of entertainment, sports, and a lot of other great things like video games. Until next time, though, we are going to be out of here. We appreciate you guys. And once again, I'm Gary Vaughn. He's Sean Garmer, and we'll catch you guys down the road.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.